Hello, it's Friday, July the 30th. This is the Andrew Pearce Show, coming as ever from the Daily Mail newsroom. Coming up, we'll be talking about Doctor Who, the first female Doctor Who. She's quitting amid controversy. The show has become too woke. It has. Also, the Olympic Games, more on that. Gold and silver, 6 medals today so far. The Welsh are beating England, so are Scotland, in ending the contentious track and trace. But first, the government appears to have signalled an introduction to COVID vaccine passports by the back door. No jab, no job. Do you agree with that? So the Foreign Secretary Dominic Raab appears to have given the green light to employers to require staff to be fully vaccinated. Here in the UK, Pimlico Plumbers were one of the first to insist on vaccines for staff, and the Chief Executive, Scott Mullin, joins me now. Scott, how much resistance has there been amongst your staff to being double jabbed?
Well, to be honest with you, Andrew, we put it out there at the beginning of the year. I mean, we were the first business to put out there, you know, no jab, no job. And at the time, you know, a few business people were coming on to us and saying, you know, we totally agree with you, but don't you feel you're going to get a backlash off of this, etc. And we simply, from the beginning of this, we simply said, look, at the end of the day, the most important thing is our staff and is our customers. And, you know, we are not going to employ anybody who doesn't have the jab. Now, when we first put it out there, our staff, we've got 450 staff members, and they come on saying to us, thank you so much for looking after us. The public were saying, really appreciate what you're doing, our safety's first. So we didn't get a backlash on it. I think, you know, we had one or two people at the time, but I'm not sure I really want the jab. Do I stand? And to be honest, a lot of the staff members actually got on to them and said, look, don't you think you're being a little bit selfish here? And we now don't have a problem with it whatsoever. And we stand by what we said at the beginning of the year, and we will continue that, is no jab, you won't be coming on at Pimlico Plumbers.
I would have thought too, Scott, your customers will be reassured to know that the man or woman, the engineer who's coming in to fix their problems, has been double jabbed.
Certainly. Well, I mean, at the beginning of all this COVID situation, Andrew, we very early on, we knew that we had to sort of get our guys masks, or our ladies masks up. They had to have sinks in the back of the vans. We needed to have thermometers. We had COVID test kits. So when we was calling our customers, we was making them aware we was on our way. We was making them aware if you wanted to go to a different room or you wanted to go out, put the door on the latch, we can go in, get the job done, call you over the phone, let you know it's complete. So there was a real little bit of concern. And we made sure straight away that people knew that we were the people to go to, and we were going to make sure you're safe and fine. And you're totally right, Andrew. Now, you know, people are coming onto us still now. Can you make sure the guy's got the double jab? Could you please give me proof that he's got it when he's coming? And we got a lot of customers asking for that, and we're more than fine with that, and we're pleased to do that for them. So, yeah, I mean, it's a lot of reassurance have come, and, you know, a lot of customers have thanked us for being how we are.
And did you and your dad, Charlie Mullins, did you lead by example, Scott? Did you both get double jabbed pretty quickly?
I was double jabbed very quickly. I mean, I'm double jabbed, and my father was away for a majority of the time. He's had his jabs, but he wasn't as quick as I was done. I was done very, very quickly. So, yeah, I mean, I certainly led by example, and the rest of our staff did. And, you know, we've been leading by example, we feel, for sure.
And just finally, how is business?
Business is booming. I mean, we've had our best financial year ever. I mean, it's close to £50 million for us for the turnover for the year at the end of May. We had a fantastic year. We've got more staff than ever. Our staff have been more thankful than ever. I mean, Andrew, we've had to put a lot of things in place. You know, you know, people were coming in under very difficult times. So, obviously, we were giving bonuses to people, with free parking, free lunches. We had to really thank people for coming in. I mean, you know, we were an emergency service, and it was testing times, but we've expanded as a business. It's actually made us stronger. We're actually a better outfit for a difficult situation. And Andrew, we're not at this situation yet. We understand that. And I honestly feel now that you've got the likes of Google, your Facebook, Netflix, they're all of a sudden now saying, you know, no jab, no job. And I honestly feel that, you know, a lot of the youngsters now are starting to understand, and I think people need to be made aware. If you've got underlying health issues, of course you can't have this jab. But if you haven't, then, you know, it's very, very selfish out there, in my opinion, you know. And as a business, we've got to look after each other out there. And it might not be, you know, these people might say, well, you know, if I get this, virus, I'll be all right, I'm young. But yeah, but at the end of the day, you may pass it on to your father, your grandparents, you know. And my policy, the government should have done it a long time ago, Andrew. They should have pulled their finger out a bit quicker. I would personally believe, and they're doing it now, but if you don't have the jab, then you don't go to cinemas, you don't go to football games. You can't lead the life that everybody else who is working together does lead, and going on holiday. I mean, I totally agree with the government, and I think it's the way forward so that we can all push forward and get on with a normal life again.
Absolutely. That's Scott Mullins, who's the Chief Executive of Pimlico Plumbers. Thanks for joining us. So visit mailplus.co.uk to listen to the Andrew Pearce Show for free and in full, along with our other podcasts and video series. Remember to tell your Alexa speaker to play Daily Mail News. Wales is set to scrap the contentious track and trace system a full week before England. Scotland are also moving their plans forward. In England, the rules change on 16th of August, but pressure is building on the government to move the dates forward. Dr. Roland Salmond is a former regional epidemiologist for Wales, and he joins me now. Dr. Salmond, Wales is going to stop what we've now branded the pingdemic a week earlier than England. Do you support that decision?
I certainly don't think that track and trace, either a track and trace in England or track trace protecting Wales, has perhaps delivered as people hoped it might do. I mean, the word on the street is it's been more successful in Wales because it's been more closely linked with the local public health teams who actually have to do the finding. But I think you're always going to have difficulty when you try and use these kind of tools in large, amorphous, shifting populations. If you want to use them in controlled settings, like if you have an outbreak in a factory or a school or a university campus, that's an entirely different matter because you've got a register of the population you're trying to chase. But as I say, when you try and use them more widely, it's very hard to get both high levels of people contacted and then actually necessarily find the people. So I don't think that it'll make a great deal of difference that it's gone.
The Foreign Secretary was, and both the Transport Secretary were both out and about on interviews today, both insisting that we've got to stick with the August 16th date in England. And yet at the same time, they've relaxed travel rules to allow people who've been double vaccinated to come in from the EU and the United States. It seems like the left hand is doing something rather different to the right hand.
I think what you've got here is a general lack of consistency across the board, whether it's between government departments or whether it's between different countries of the United Kingdom. I think part of this is animated by the fact that much of the scientific advice has come from mathematical modellers, and what's seeped from them into the political consciousness is this idea that there's the R number, which there indeed there is, but that it sort of functions as a volume control. So if you make little tweaks to some restriction here or there, you'll get some proportionate benefit from the spread of the disease. In point of fact, many of the things are non-linear, so they work in an all or nothing fashion. So when you so that these very piecemeal changes, whichever they are, probably aren't going to deliver very much at all. They're just theatre.
That's interesting, just it. And what of the decision of the Prime Minister to open up to allow travellers to come in from the EU and the United States? The Labour Party, the Labour leader, has said the policy is reckless. Of course, the policy will only apply to people who've been double vaccinated, but there's some contention as to whether some people may have been double jabbed on the continent, not with Pfizer or AstraZeneca, but with vaccines which aren't seen as perhaps as effective.
I certainly don't think it's reckless. I mean, it's been interesting. The opposition very reasonably take their role to be that of opposing the government, but I've always felt that they've jumped the wrong way. Instead of actually examining what measures the government have taken have actually worked, they've always erred on the side of saying, we need more of this, more extreme versions of that, stricter versions of something else. In point of fact, there's a very progressive argument that I'm surprised they're not more interested in that says there have been an awful lot of harms that have arisen from many of the measures that we've been taken that will translate into health burdens down the line, and maybe we should think a bit more carefully about why we're doing them. One of the things that cheers me up about Wales is that the discussion does now seem to have moved on to talking about something that they're calling the five harms. Okay, it's a bit cliched at one level, but at least it means there's a broader discussion. They're talking about the direct harms of COVID. They're talking about the indirect pressures on the NHS. They're talking about the unwanted effects of the protection measures that are being taken on people's health, and they're also talking about the economic effects and the effects on social equality. I'm delighted that broader discussion started, but once you start having that broader discussion, then many of these differences in how you tweak the policy start to look pretty irrelevant.
Very interesting. Always interesting to talk to you. That's Dr. Roland Salmon, who's the former regional epidemiologist for Wales. Visit mailplus.co.uk/subscribe to get access to all our podcasts, videos, opinion pieces, and much more. You can also get in touch by tweeting us at mailplus or me at Tory Boy Pierce. So another great day in the Olympics for Team GB. 6 medals, gold, silvers. Matt Gatwood, who is of course our deputy sports editor, is here with the latest. So BMX, Matt, we are the champions.
Yes, who'd have thought it? So a bit of an unexpected gold, really, and the first woman to get a gold for GB. So as you say, we won one gold, we've won 2 silver and 3 bronze today in the Olympics, and that takes us to 6 golds altogether. And Beth Shriver, Essex girl, 22 years of age, won on the BMX, which is crazy. They sort of release this gate, they shoot down the ramp to kick it off, and then they hair around the track. And she superbly came home first. And it was a brilliant story because she was cheered on by teammate Kai White, who just before her had won a silver as well. And he was so brilliant at the end, sort of celebrating with her. And he lifted her up because she suddenly couldn't stand because she had this sort of lactic acid explosion in her leg. So she was exhausted. And he sort of carried her around the track as they celebrated. So it was lovely scenes and great stuff.
Good, good, good. And disappointment, Matt, in the rowing, because we got a bronze today and I heard one of the team members saying we are very disappointed with our medal haul. Is the rowing finished now?
Yeah, the rowing's done now. And yeah, Team GB.
We normally get quite a few golds and silvers, don't we?
We do, yeah. We normally boss it, as you know, with the likes of Redgrave, Pinsent, Cracknell, all these great names that have won so many gold medals down the years. And this time we've just picked up 2 medals. It's our worst show since Montreal 1976 in the rowing, and there's a little bit of infighting and arguments going on now. It all boils down to this great coach, the legendary coach Jürgen Grobler, who's a German guy, has been behind the sort of medal success. Well, the Team GB got rid of him a year ago. He wanted a year's extension to his contract, which obviously would have run out at the end of the Olympics when it should have been last year. And they couldn't agree terms on this year extension, and he's gone. And it's almost like an attempt to shift the culture. He was quite a hard-nosed coach, but he obviously was very successful. And I think they're trying a bit of a culture shift, and it may be working in terms of the rowers being happier, but it's not working in terms of producing medals. And it's that fine balancing act. And so, yeah, they'll be very disappointed with that medal haul.
That rower I heard on the radio didn't sound happy at all, Matt, with just a bronze. So disappointment. But it's not just Olympics, of course, Matt. We've got another Lions match against South Africa on Saturday. We won the first one. Close encounter, wasn't it? But they wore them down in the second half. South Africa will come fighting back, all guns blazing, because they're at home in Cape Town. What's going to happen, do you think?
Yeah, well, it's a massive, massive test. And the build-up this week has all been taken up by the coaches of South Africa, particularly Razi Erasmus, who's the head of South African rugby, just obsessed by the refereeing last week, which, you know, to most neutrals' eyes wasn't particularly biased or one-sided one way or the other. But they've been absolutely obsessed with thinking that the Lions have been favoured by the officials, to the extent that Razi Erasmus yesterday posted an hour-long video where he, in microscopic detail, went through all the refereeing decisions and why he thought they was wrong. And it's, you know, this great series, it's pretty ugly behaviour, really, to bring it down to all this. You know, they're supposed to respect the referee in rugby, and this is just anything but. So that's been the sort of build-up. But I think the Lions are trying to ignore all that and just focus on the rugby. And I fancy them, I think the South Africans have got themselves in a bit of a twist over all this, and I fancy the Lions to put it to bed 2-0 tomorrow.
Great stuff, Matt. Well, I hope you're right. Obviously, I won't be watching, but I'll be expecting you to give me a blow-by-blow on Monday.
Will do.
All right. That's Matt Gatwood, who is the Daily Mail's deputy sports editor. It's now time for our regular City Update with Ruth Sunderland, who's business editor at the Daily Mail. Ruth, a really, really interesting intervention by the boss of PricewaterhouseCoopers, PwC, who says, he's effectively saying, get back to work, especially if you're young, because if you stay at home, working from home, it's going to damage your career prospects in all manner of ways.
That's right. This is Kevin Ellis, who's the senior partner and chairman of PwC in the UK. And he's really shot from the hip. He's told it like it is. What he said is endless working from home is going to blight the careers of the young. He said that his generation, he's 58, have reaped enormous advantages from being in the office. So things like being able to learn from older people, being able to network, bumping into the boss at the lift, all of these things, meeting your partner as well, you know, other things, socialising, camaraderie with your colleagues. And he's really concerned that the young people in his firm could miss out as a result on career progression. Now, he's one of the biggest employers in the UK. He's got 22,000 people, and the average age is just 31. They've hired 3,500 during the COVID crisis. So, you know, they're continuing to take people on. And his concern is that there are people who've started their careers in the middle of the pandemic who've never even really started life in an office, and that this could prove to be a bit of a permanent disadvantage for them unless they get back in. Now, what he's not saying is come in regardless of COVID 5 days a week and become chained to your desk. He's saying start to come in, you know, 3 days a week in the current environment. So I think there's a really good balance here between safety and between getting accustomed to office life and getting into that mindset of work that you need to be in. So, you know, I for one would really welcome this as an extremely sensitive intervention. It's a bit of a reflection on the world when, you know, something like this that is plain common sense almost seems, you know, seems so controversial, but you know, there we are. This is the world we're in.
And I think it's a really important intervention, Ruth, and because much of the civil service is still working from home. We know you and I were at the beginning of the pandemic. We work from home, but I'm really quite glad now to be back in the office.
I completely agree with you. I think the civil service really needs to be setting an example. And let's not forget, often offices, government offices, are very important for the periphery, you know, for the sandwich makers and the
Absolutely
local shops.
Right.
And, you know, they really need to be setting a proper example. And I think we've all had experiences, you know, whether it's with the DVLA or some other branch of central or local government, where I just don't believe things are working as efficiently with people being at home as it would be if they were all in their offices together. You know, I think you really do lose something when you're working from people, when companies have got too many people working from home. It's about a balance, isn't it? I think we probably could learn something, you know, perhaps pre-pandemic there was possibly too much presenteeism and too much jacket on the back of the chair and feeling scared to leave your desk. So there's a balance, but what I fear is the balance is tipping the wrong way, and there are people there who are under the delusion that you can work from home permanently 5 days a week for the rest of your life and that it wouldn't damage your career. But I'm sorry, it will.
Absolutely. That's Ruth Sunderland, who is business editor at the Daily Mail. Thanks for joining us. Jodie Whittaker, who made history as the first female Doctor Who, she's quitting after just three series. Viewing figures are falling, and there has been growing criticism that the scripts have become just too woke. Miss Whittaker took up the role in 2017 with much fanfare. Eleanor Sharples joins me now, who is, of course, the Daily Mail's TV and radio correspondent. I'm a big fan of Doctor Who, Eleanor, and I think it was quite interesting at the start. Huge figures for the first couple of episodes for the first female Time Lord, but it seems just to have gone off a bit.
Yeah, it does. I mean, I'm not going to lie, Andrew, it's not my favourite programme on television, but it has such a legion of fans. When she came in, obviously her first episode, I think, was in a special in 2017, and then she properly like kicked off her reign in 2018 and, you know, started really well. It had some of the best viewing figures since it revived in 2005. But it just has plummeted in recent years. And particularly, I think people have just been a bit frustrated with the storylines and, you know, them being too politically correct and, Yeah.
And that, do you think that's what's done it? Because a lot of people are saying, oh, people didn't like the first female Doctor Who. I don't think it's about her so much, is it? It's about the pretty lousy scripts.
I definitely don't think it's because of Jodie. I actually think she's really likeable, and I think people have found her quite refreshing in the role. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of relate to her as a person anyway. And I just find it interesting. I think it seems from the quotes that she's given yesterday that her and Chris Chibnall, who cast her in the role and also who is the showrunner, they made a pact that they were going to leave at the same time. So, you know, it kind of does seem to be a bit of a thing that, you know, former doctors have all kind of left after three series, which is the case with what's happened in the past with Peter Capaldi and stuff. So I don't think it's a huge surprise. It was rumoured back in January.
Yes, it was.
But it's just been confirmed now. But yeah, I just don't think it's been as popular this time around as it has been in the past.
Oh, yeah. And forgive me if it's been announced, but I must have missed it. Do we know who's going to be the new doctor?
No, we don't. It's just the bookies throwing out who they think is the favourite. Well, so they've got Years and Years singer, who was also in It's a Sin, Ollie Alexander, who's 31. They're thinking that he's mainly the front runner, but I think his agent has said in the past that actually, you know, it's all well and good putting him in the frame, but you know that's not quite the case. So they've kind of said no, that isn't going to happen. So that'd be quite an interesting one. They've also got I May Destroy You's Michaela Cole, 33 she is. So that'd be quite an interesting one. You know, that would be the first Black Time Lord female again. And Coral have got her at 8-1. And then some of the others in the mix would be Chris Marshall, Death in Paradise, and also Richard Ayoade. There are a few out there. I mean, Phoebe Bridge, her name's been thrown in at 25-1.
They link her with everything. I think we should start a campaign to bring back David Tennant. He was a fabulous Doctor Who.
He was fantastic. Really, really great. I think, yeah, he's the one that, if I watched most of Doctor Who, it was when he was in the TARDIS. So yeah, it'll be really interesting to see where it does go. And also, obviously, someone else is going to be writing the scripts and leading it as well. So it'll be an interesting change when it comes around.
Absolutely.
But obviously,
absolutely,
she doesn't go until next year. So she'll be on our screens for a bit longer.
That's Eleanor Sharples, who's the Daily Mail's TV and radio critic, talking about the departure of the first female Doctor Who. That's all we've got time for today. For the latest from the Daily Mail, download the Mail Plus app. Every weekday at 5 p.m. you can listen to me all over again. I'm Andrew Pearce. This is The Andrew Pearce Show. I'll be back on Monday. Have yourselves a great weekend. Let's hope we get more medals with Team GB over the weekend, and have a very good night.